This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 20th of April, 2021. And a reminder to everyone that Ole Hansen, our head of commodity strategy, will be hosting a webinar today. You can find that information on slide two or on webinars.saxo. That's at 12 o'clock CET for those that want to tune in to that. Anything else you want to add to that, Ole?
No, actually not. There's obviously a lot going on right now in the commodity market. There's been a lot of talk of the commodity super cycle. We had a bit of a break here over the last month. So just taking a closer look at what are the different factors that's driving this current recovery or current rally in commodities.
All right. And if we look at the action yesterday and overnight, we have a rather weak day in the U.S., although if you look at the S&P 500, it's not that much of a hiccup. I think maybe the more interesting thing, at least to my mind, technically, is just the degree to which we've extended so-called overbought conditions. And you can see the momentum indicator I put up on slide three, the stochastic, slow stochastic indicator rolling over a bit because we've had a couple of down sessions within this last bit of series of up days. I don't know what you say, Peter. Just to my mind, it just, you know, nothing, no real signs of weakness, but it just seems like we're remarkably stretched here as we're entering the heart of earnings season. What's your take? And lead us through what your impression is of what's moving in the internals of this market.
Well, as long as the earnings continue to be strong and interest rates are not moving significantly higher, despite of all the inflationary signs we see everywhere, then it's a go for equities. As we've talked about endlessly now for 3 months, keep an eye on commodities, keep an eye on the dollar and the interest rate levels. That will be your key signal and filter to use on your stop loss. But otherwise, I mean, on slide four, I mean, our top pick for this year was the commodity sector, as we discussed in early January when we launched the first equity theme basket, and we're sticking with that top pick. And so far this year, it has been the best performing theme, and it was up 0.3% yesterday when a lot of other pockets of the equity market was bleeding, especially the crypto and blockchain, but also India and green transformation stocks, biotech, bubble stocks, etc. And we had news, maybe Ole will comment on that as well, but you had Vale output missing pretty dramatically, I would say, against the consensus estimates. And that's boosting the iron ore rally. If you take the Bloomberg's total return index on their what they call roll select, where they select the ones with the best roll yield, that touched a new high for the cycle yesterday, up again today by 0.5%. And as you can see on slide four in the small insert, I mean, the vaccine breakout, for now, I still think the jury is a little bit out, but it seemed like that the November the 6th was the turning point for value stocks. You can see value stocks have been outperforming growth stocks ever since, and that is the theme that we are still in. Although it's not a strong, robust theme, as you can see, it really oscillates on its way up higher here value. So it's not a strong theme yet. I still think there's some uncertainty, but the high interest rates would definitely help on that.
Yeah, and you bring in interest rates as a key part of the conversation, and it looked to me like the NASDAQ 100 was a little bit less, or was a little bit more impacted by rising yields yesterday. And the yield rise yesterday was not so much focused in the U.S., where we did see yields picking up, but in Europe, where they picked up a bit more aggressively than they normally have recently. So you saw the bund yield pushing towards the highs of the cycle. You can see the perspective there on slide six, as we're getting towards that negative 20 basis point level, effectively the high since the pandemic breakout. There was the crazy back and forth swing right there as the markets were crashing, but effectively this minus 20 basis points here. We have an ECB meeting on Thursday, and I want to get to you in a moment, Altea, on that. But I'm just noticing the action yesterday, and I put up a slide and I tweeted this out yesterday. I've updated it for this morning's podcast slide deck. You can see on slide five where I put up the gold price, gold versus the dollar, spot gold versus the euro dollar. And you can see how gold, I think, was spooked to a pretty considerable degree by that chunky rise in yields yesterday, but the euro dollar poking further. So I think it'd be very interesting here if yields are on the rise again. if they can stay tame somehow in the US, whereas maybe there's a re-rating higher and longer yields in Europe, that could be interesting for feeding potential further euro dollar upside. In any case, if US yields get going again, it'd be very interesting to watch the real yield space, because I think euro dollar will have a much tougher time rising in that case. But what are your thoughts, ECB, Althea, as we're heading into this ECB meeting on Thursday? There's been some pretty hefty debate among the governing council about the degree to which it is necessary. To my mind, I'm not sure why they need to be drumming so hard on keeping longer yields lower when the economic outcomes are looking pretty strong. And eventually we are going to get to this other side of this vaccination effort. But take it away. I'll let you speak your mind on the ECB here.
Yeah, on that note, John, I want to take you to slide 8. And on that slide, on the right-hand side, you have your answer why the ECB would need to be dovish also at this ECB meeting. For the simple reason that inflation expectations are nowhere near where the ECB want them to be. And if you compare the inflation expectations in the US, there on the chart on the right, you have the US dollar inflation swap zero coupon curve compared to the European one. And what you can see is that while in the US that curve is inverted, so there is higher expectations in the front end of the inflation curve, in Europe, there is a completely different shape. So inflation expectations are expected to be like in a much longer term period. So basically, the biggest thing here, John, is that the ECB at this point in time will need to continue to be extremely accommodative. And if we have yields rising in the European space, then the financial condition might tighten. And the ECB cannot allow that and will need to be dovish once again, and will need to try to control that rise in yields. I want also to highlight something very interesting that happened last week and was completely under the radar. If you go always on slide 8 on the chart on the left, you see that the violet line that represents 10 years Portuguese government bonds. Last week, there was basically a spike in yields of around 10 basis points. What is happening there is that the ECB financing to Portuguese lender rose in March to the highest since 2014. The highest it rose was in June 2012, in the midst of the European sovereign crisis. So what I'm saying is that there might be some deterioration of banks' balance sheet going on, and the ECB knows that. And this is another reason why it would need to keep the conditions extremely easy.
All right. Yeah, I remember also another aspect of Portugal, if I recall, back when we were covering the EU sovereign debt over the financial crisis there, or the sovereign debt crisis there, is that Portugal is the number one country that should just walk away from its debts, because virtually all of its debt is net held in foreign hands. And of course, we have, as a backdrop in FX, it's all about the weaker dollar here. And we've seen the even, but also very weak, very low yielders. So the yen is weak. The Swiss franc is quite weak here. Swedish krona not performing that well, at least in the last session. And you can see on slide 7, the new trend developments, where the dollar downtrend is deepening. The reading is the strongest now across the G10 plus China, with minus 3.7. And just as a little insert there on cable, as it is pushing on that 140 level, a really critical level, as you can see. It ran up above that in that very steep ramp earlier this year, and then found that level as key resistance. So a pivotal level for cable. But Ole, as well, I mean, Peter talked about the commodity space is getting the most loving in the equity markets this year. What's the latest on commodities? We saw some pretty strong metals prices again overnight in China.
Yeah, it looks like most of the sectors are firing on most cylinders once again. I suppose precious metals being a little bit of the exception. Even though we had that breakout in gold last week, we're still not as you also highlighted with the yields higher yesterday, we gold is still not out of the woods. We're just toying with that support level, that key 1760-65 area. But elsewhere, oil markets are firm. Industrial metals are high, especially those that Goldman Sachs has phrased green metals, those that's required in the decarbonization push. And then we got the whole grain sector and agriculture in general just being on a tear still. And we can start off with just take a look at the grain markets on slide 11. We see corn here breaking higher to the highest level in 8 years. Again, it's a very, very strong exports, overseas demand, and it's also ongoing weather worries. Now we have to deal with some outlooks pointing towards frosty weather over the coming days here, and that's basically delaying the planting progress. And you can see that in the small inserts on the right hand side that we only just started reporting this. This is coming out every Monday at 8 o'clock GMT, so that is likely to create some volatility going forward over the next few weeks. But we see it. We're starting off on quite a weak point, being below the average for this time of year. So the grain section is elevated. Speculative interest is elevated as well. We can see that especially in corn, where a record 400,000 lots is currently held. But as long as the technical and the fundamental outlook remain supportive, that long is not going to see much of a change. And then I think we also just have to mention it's the 1 year anniversary of the collapse in crude oil price last year, April 20th. Black day for the oil market, but also one that sent the market on the strong recovery path that we've seen ever since. Collapse in oil production or collapse in oil demand leading to a collapse in oil production. And we're back to where we are today, much firmer ground, almost back to the highs we saw at the beginning of 2020. So it's been a very, very volatile year, but one that's where we're not out of the woods just yet. I think we still have to be somewhat concerned about the daily case count continue to move higher on the virus front, especially in places like India, which is the world's third biggest consumer of fuel products. So that basically makes us a little bit hesitant about getting too excited at this level, at this moment in time, seeing potentially back towards the highs we saw a few weeks back. But we need to see a thorough recovery in the virus count in order for that to break higher.
All right. I want to get back to you later on gold for a comment, and Alceo on China, some really key comments there. But Peter, I know you need to jump off the call shortly. So let's get your latest on some of these earnings reports rolling in yesterday, especially IBM and what you're looking at today.
Yeah. So on slide 12, I've put in some small inserts. And before we talk IBM, just quickly want to highlight Coca-Cola because it relates very well to our commodity sector theme, but also and all his recent comments. We had the Coca-Cola CFO out saying on the conference call yesterday that the commodity environment is very challenging over the next 12 to 18 months. They definitely see input cost as a pressure. They say the inflation pressure, especially specifically in plastic, aluminium, juice and coffee. They can manage it for now, they say this year, but they expect it to be a challenge in 2022. And I think their comments there is that they can manage inflation in the short term. I think a lot of companies have actually increased their buffers in their business because of they're cutting down on other types of costs during the pandemic. So they have something to eat into. But then as you roll over into 2022, then the game begins. And what I mean about the games, you could almost call it a hunger game, because as you know, the inflationary pressures continue, you have to make a decision as a business. Do you want to eat it? So basically lower your profit margins, or do you want to pass it on to consumers? If you pass it on to consumers, you're running the risk that some other competitor in your industry will not and eat into their margins, and then the Hunger Games begins. All right. So that's the big challenge for next year. In terms of IBM, they really are showing strength now. So one still not the biggest segment, but it's getting there very very shortly, I think, probably within the next year. Their cloud and cognitive software, very splashy wordings there, will be the biggest segment, and it's growing right now, as you can see, very rapidly, double-digit growth rates. It's the Red Hat acquisition they did recently, I think it was last year or maybe 2 years ago, time flies. That's part of this group, and this is the future of IBM. I think this will be the big catalyst for the stock price over the coming year. So we're talking about a company right now that is valued at a free cash flow yield of 10%. I mean, it's given the interest rate backdrop, and you see where other technology companies are, then IBM. We also talked about Intel. I think Intel is close to 10% free cash flow yield as well. I think if those two, old giants, if you will, they can change the perception, they can definitely change the valuation. So that's the key story here for IBM. And then, John, on slide 13, we have the earnings calendar, and today's earnings are the ones we have been focused on, Johnson & Johnson. I think they report before the market opens. The same goes for Procter & Gamble on the consumer side. And then you have Netflix, which is the media and entertainment giant, which will report after the close. And this is the one I think I will be spending most time talking about tomorrow, but also watching, because we know they had a lot of tailwind from the pandemic, and it's tailwind both by uptake in numbers and engagement by their customers, but then also that content production slowed down, so their free cash flow generation improved dramatically over the past 12 months. As we roll into 2021 and with the vaccines and a more a different outlook, it's going to be super interesting to see whether they can keep high growth rates on the top line, but also how their free cash flow is impacted from a ramp up again in content production.
Interesting indeed on the earnings front. And now I just want to take the debate back. I didn't let you get in a word actually when I was talking about slide 5. We're talking about gold getting spooked, and it was testing through some key levels yesterday technically, and of course one tailwind is a weaker dollar, one headwind was some stronger sovereign yields, especially in Europe. It's a pretty nervous sort of area here for gold, isn't it?
It is indeed, because it's the first, that break above 1860-65 area last week was the first sign that we potentially could be out of the woods in terms of weakness that has been seen in the market now for the past 6 months or even more. And also just combined with the double bottom that we have in place now with those 1700, but we obviously need to see momentum buyers come in. We need to see hedge funds who up until last Tuesday had cut their position by more than 50% since early this year. They need to re-engage, and quite a lot of these traders, they are not that fundamentally focused. They are more technically based. They are looking for breakouts. They're looking for momentum. And if we don't get that momentum going, then they will continue to sit on the fence. So the market is most certainly right now torn between focusing on the weaker dollar or focusing on strength in or the gyrations in the yield market. So it's a critical week for gold, and we probably need to see it at least above 1800. I'll prefer to see it above 1820 to really say that we can start to see some additional momentum come into the market. But then we've got some geopolitical tensions as well lurking in the background that may also just provide some support. But so far it seems like it's doing some pretty hard work trying to stay above these key levels.
Yeah, on geopolitical tensions, there's plenty to look at. We had Xi Jinping out yesterday at a Hainan conference, Boao Forum, I think it's called, talking about sort of speaking against the U.S. approach and looking for more multilateral approach to going forward here. We'll get into the specifics there, but I think China really is critical, not only on that front, but on its policy front. And we had a Chinese central bank meeting out overnight, the PBOC leaving rates unchanged. It's been tight for the cycle, as it has the luxury of perhaps focusing on keeping leverage low while enjoying the stimulus that's coming from elsewhere in the world due to the pandemic response. I'll say you've got a couple of really cool charts and thoughts here on slide 9, talking about the situation. And obviously one of the reasons that China does maintain that tighter policy is it does have a risk in its aggregate size of its corporate debt relative to the economy.
Yes, absolutely, John. I think that it's becoming clearer and clearer that the big goal of China at this point of time is to deleverage, but still by supporting a growing economy. And they do that by keeping lending rates unchanged and by increasing stress testing among financial institutions in China. China. This year, China is about to stress test around 4,000 banks versus 1,500 last year. So it really shows how they are taking this deleverage issue in their heart. But I think if we look at from the perspective of bond investors, at this point of time, if we look at Chinese US dollar denominated debt, it looks quite compelling. On slide number 9, you will have on the right hand side a chart that shows a Chinese corporate debt with 5 and more years of maturity in US dollars. This is a Bloomberg Barclays index and takes into account on investment grade corporates. So what we have seen in the month of April with all the news that were coming out from Warung, the credit spreads of investment grade corporates in China have been widening compared to their government debt. And since yesterday, we have seen a fast tightening of spreads because of the PBOC stepping in, basically supporting the entire system. So the big take here is that for long-term investors, it might be worthwhile to have a look and take some China exposure, but it's very important to keep in mind that this is a long-term investment and that there is going to be deleveraging. So it's very important to cherry pick in order not to be caught into some defaults on the way out of the leveraging of China.
Yeah, and I guess there was a big support for the whole space. And one of the reasons the Chinese market in general has turned around with this Huarong story, where it looks like there's been a signal that people are taking that they don't want to let this thing go down. So I think that's an interesting development as well out there. Let's go to the macro calendar, which is very quiet for today. Some Canadian numbers up later today. And actually on the subject of Canada, it is the home price index there that is out today. There was a big budget announcement yesterday. It includes the new tax programs. And I think it's on the tax side that things are really interesting, a very interesting signal here from Canada. So besides 100 billion plus Canadian in new spending, there was a 1% tax that will be assessed on real estate owned by foreigners that is vacant. I think a lot of that aimed at Chinese investors in particular, but even more intriguing, a 3%, and this has got to really get that much coverage, 3% digital services tax, basically aimed at the US internet giants. And that's on revenues, 3% of revenues. And then the quote was, let me see if I can pull up the quote here because it's very interesting. And, you know, putting this up against what the recent announcement was from or effort initiative from U.S. Treasury Secretary Yellen to have some sort of global minimum tax. This tax will be 3% of revenue starting January 1st of next year, quote, until an acceptable multilateral approach comes into effect. This is really critical stuff. Because in other words, if the U.S. isn't able to cobble together a multilateral approach via the OECD or otherwise on a global minimum tax, you're going to see this crazy patchwork and sort of you know, almost tension geopolitically. France has done something similar. Now you have Canada moving on this front. This will be a very interesting space to watch also for the implications are for the rise in the eventual tax levels for these big infotech and media giants. So watching that front as well in coming weeks and months. Besides that, we have the verdict soon on this Derek Chauvin case in the U.S., which could or could not unleash all manner of civil unrest. So that's worth noting as well. It's not on the calendar. New Zealand CPI could be very interesting for that currency. And then we have the central bank meetings noted, especially the ECB meeting, I think would be very interesting. What happens to European yields around that and potentially as well gold. I think it'll be a very interesting meeting on Thursday. With that, we're going to call it a day and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.